This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 26 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Antarctica.
Antarctica, Pennsylvania. Yeah, it's winter has kind of rolled in with some serious gusto, David. It's not fun, but hey, this is much more fun, so we can forget the snow for the next 30 minutes and just have fun talking UAVs.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not supposed to talk about the weather, but it's been a long day. So welcome to episode 26. So the topics tonight are checking up on the FAA's lack of progress in meeting the UAS mandate, an update on the plans at Griffiths International Airport, our UAS test site that we talked about in episode 21 of the UAV Digest, a former United States governor hiding from drones. It's a boat. It's a drone. No, it's a system to monitor our river environments. Maintaining UAS control in the airspace with satellites in Europe. And last but not least, in this time of Olympic fervor, everyone's noticing that in the background are drones. So we'll be talking about droning on at the Olympics. So it sounds like a good episode.
Yes, it sounds like a good lineup, a lot of good topics. So let's get started.
Well, our first topic, I guess, would be good news on our follow-up on episode 24. If you go to the UAVDigest.com and click on episode 24's link, you'll see comments about the proposal on UAS licensing and permitting. Pretty interesting comments, huh, Max?
Yeah, we're getting some good dialogue there. This is great. We talked in that episode about listener Tim Trott's proposal for licensing and permitting. And we've got some good comments, some good thoughts, a little dialogue going there. So we invite everybody to take a look at that and contribute to the conversation.
All right. So let's talk about lack of conversation or lack of progress. General Aviation News this week reports the FAA reports on drones and next gen. A congressional hearing was held to check on the progress made by the FAA in meeting the roughly 200 mandates of the FAA Modernization and Reform Act of 2012. Not many of the mandates are being met, huh, Max?
No, the FAA has fallen behind schedule. Most significantly, I think, on the Next Generation Air Transportation System, that's frequently referred to as Next Gen, and also the integration of UAS into the National Airspace System. Probably we want to focus on the UAS end of that, but just quickly on next gen, the FAA has a 2020 deadline for implementing the Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast Program, ADS-B, which is a key part, fundamental to the next gen modernization. Well, they're still working on the standards, and this is something that the operators, aircraft operators, are looking for before they invest money in the hardware and the systems in order to bring this into place. And in some cases, it sort of relates to UAS, I guess, David, because it's a communications element of flight that may have implications in the unmanned world.
Yeah, I mean, part of the UAS integration is one of the things that is being worked on for that is working on ADS-B. However, you can't integrate them into UASs if you can't standardize what you're integrating into normal plain Jane airplanes. So, yeah, this has got an adverse effect on the UAS integration, but I have a feeling that our seek and avoid situations will become independent versus ADS-B, which is supposed to streamline the airspace in the United States, but that's not happening yet.
Now, on the UAS side of things, we know, and we've talked about, the FAA has released its five-year roadmap and has also identified the six UAS test sites, but they say that they will not meet the mandated September 2015 deadline for safely integrating unmanned aircraft into the national airspace system. And again, I mean, this is kind of really not a surprise to us, but what we saw was at this hearing was the FAA sitting in front of the Congress and saying that out loud, in effect.
Yeah, and the other part about it is it's purse strings. They have a mandate to get this done, and they seem to be tiptoeing through it, and then Congress wonders, well, why are we spending all of this money if nothing's happening? And it's, so we've got to, the FAA needs to step up its game a little bit and maybe start moving forward to show progress, because lack of progress might mean lack of funding, which might mean it never happening, which is a really frightening argument.
And one thing that I noted, David, from some of the reports of this hearing is that the FAA didn't commit or offer an alternative timeline. They said they wouldn't meet the mandate, but they didn't say what they could do. And from my career in business, if you can't make the objective in the time that you really wanted to, one of the most important things to do is to come back and say, well, if you can't do that, what can you do? And the FAA hasn't done that here, apparently. They've also created, it's noted, the UAS Integration Office to issue the NPRM, which is the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, for unmanned aircraft integration. But as you mentioned, David, sometimes budget and funding, that office doesn't have any operations budget. So I guess the progress these days that we can kind of look to is what's happening at the test sites.
Which is a good segue, because we got a really good article from the Oneida Dispatch this week about, they had a hearing about what was going to be happening at the Griffiths International Airport, which, of course, is the Northeast, or New Air, Northeast UAS Aerospace Integration Research Alliance's home base, which was one of the six winning test sites. And whereas the FAA is making little progress, the hearing announced that April 1st, and this isn't a joke, testing will begin at the Griffiths site. Huh, Max?
Yeah, that's really good to hear. They are going to focus on agricultural and not military applications, they say. And they also noted that the company Flyterra will be the first commercial flyer of drones at that base, and that they expect to conduct tests for about 8 months. Flyterra is, we'll put a link to their website in the show notes. They're also on Twitter. You can find all that in the show notes if you'd like to follow them. And they're going to do some data collection over the course of those 8 months.
Now, if we keep the weather up that we're having, they might not be flying until early August.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're looking to do drone agriculture, which, of course, we've talked about now a lot. And that seems to be, I don't know if the leading area in civilians is drone agriculture, but it's pretty close.
Hmm.
And the interesting thing was, we had Lawrence Brinkler on the panel of experts, and he was on our episode 21. The Steve DeMeo, who is president of Mohawk Valley Edge, Mary Callow Kraschicki, executive director of Cyber New York Alliance, and Chad Lawrence, the deputy commissioner of aviation at Oneida County. So they were very positive. And one last person was Deb Warner, the vice president for public policy and government relations. So they were very positive and upbeat. We're looking forward to hearing some responses. We've also reached out to Flyterra. Maybe we can get them on to talk about their setup and testing program. So moving on from successful drone integration, we talk about a little bit of the absurd and what's it take to become a former Minnesota governor and to hide from the drones, huh?
Yes, this is from an article in Mediaite, which describes Jesse Ventura, who, when he was a professional wrestler, was known as Jesse the Body Ventura. As David mentioned, went on to become, well, first a mayor and then a governor. He was on a CNBC program of some sort and caught the news commentators a little off guard when he announced that the reason he was in Mexico was that he has gone off the grid. And when asked, well, why have you gone off the grid? He says, well, it's so the drones can't find him. He doesn't want them to know where they are. Now, Jesse's a very interesting and outspoken guy. He's also the current host of a television program called Conspiracy Theory. And so it's kind of hard to tell if this, you know, sudden aversion to being spied on by drones is something associated with that program or motivated by that program or not. But here again, it's the privacy issue that is coming up. And this may be an extreme example of that. I think Jesse's, I don't really know why he's doing this. And I think that most people probably are not fearful of drones that are spying on them currently. But I think a lot of people have that in the back of their mind. And it's something that, you know, sort of needs to be addressed and talked about so that there can be some standards and so people can have some assurances that we're not going to live in a society where these things are flying all over the place, peering at us and recording things that we do.
I'll end it with, there were no Predator or Reaper sightings in the video. So we're going to move on and just say, you know, there is a version out there for a lot of people, and this is on par with the gun licenses to shoot the drones. We're fair and balanced here, to quote various networks. So sometimes we need to point out the other end of the spectrum besides all the positive news. And this is just one of those strange ones. But I guess we'll move on to last week. We talked about drones that were climbing on the branches like hawks. And this week, we move a bit down under to marsupials with pouches. What do you think, Max? The animal analogies keep moving on, huh?
They do, but we tend to model our inventions after animals in some cases. This is about a system that combines both a multi-rotor UAV with an ASV, an autonomous surface vehicle, that's been developed for environmental monitoring of rivers. This is something called the RiverWatch system, and it automatically measures conditions above the water, below the water, and on the surface.
Yeah, this is kind of cool. We talked about one of the drones early in one of the episodes that was launching from its own remote control boat in the middle of the river. But this case, it's using the virtual robotics V-Brain from an Italian company. It's a quad, not a quad rotor, it's six rotors. And it has a thermal imaging camera as well as a GoPro hi-fi camera. And it launches from an ASV, which is a 4.5-meter catamaran. The hulls are filled with PVC closed-cell foam, so it can't sink. A vision system with a number of cameras and sensors. A long-range laser scanner, I guess, to check out obstacles that's in front of it or back of it, as well as underwater sonar. So you've got a complete package, like they said, above, below, and on. So this is a really neat utilization, and it's pretty autonomous, the whole package.
Yeah, they've been conducting field tests of this in Portugal, and they still have some work to do. They need to look at making it completely autonomous. That's their plan. They're also looking at the charge of the UAV, and they need to test and evaluate the UAV landing algorithms. So yeah, it's an interesting sort of Swiss Army knife of environmental monitors that can go out there autonomously and use the boat part of it or the UAV part of it as necessary to take measurements and collect the data. It almost strikes me that it's like a Mars rover or something that you would send to the moon that contains all the devices and capabilities to perform a variety of different experiments and so forth. So it's an interesting application.
It's too bad it's not up and running. You know, we've had several incidents in West Virginia with the water monitoring systems with chemicals into the various rivers, and this would be a perfect thing. You could monitor the spill from the sky, you can do sampling from the water, and as well as track the flow. So I'm sure that this will find a home useful in the future. So, Max, we're releasing this on February 14th. So, of course, we need a Valentine's Day story, and I guess we'll come up with Desire, huh?
Desire. Yes, we see in Aviation Week that Europe is going to demonstrate a space-based UAS airspace integration. What this means is they're looking to integrate unmanned aircraft systems into the civil airspace, and this project has been initiated to test UAS control via satellite communications. This is a joint effort between the European Defense Agency, the EDA, and the European Space Agency, the ESA, and they're going to coordinate to show that, or to demonstrate that a UAS can operate both commercial and government missions beyond radio line of sight using satellite-based command and control data links.
Well, and most people who know the military background is satellite communication for Predators, Reapers, and various military UAVs and UAS is already in use. This would be a civilian using the civilian satellites, not necessarily the Middle East satellites. So it's DESIRE. Demonstration of satellites enabling the insertion of remotely piloted aircraft systems in Europe. Aimed at demonstrating safe insertion into remotely piloted aircraft systems. Yeah, the sexual innuendos on this one are, few and far between. A perfect Valentine's Day story, huh?
Yeah, I guess. So this is, again, using satellites for RPAS command and control. And ATC communications, and also mission data transfer to the ground. And this is part of an ongoing project, the next phase of this Desire project. And it's an interesting component. You know, I wonder how integrated these things are worldwide. In other words, we talked previously, David, about communication between the six UAS test sites and how that was going to take place and so forth, knowledge sharing and learning sharing. And here we have in Europe some related activities going on. And I don't know if there's a mechanism to share the learnings from these activities, not just in Europe, but in other countries as well. I don't know that we have something in place.
Yeah, I think as things start to accelerate, not that they haven't already, Europe will start integrating with the United States and Australia, and I'm sure that we will start having more networking, if not necessarily by the governments. I'm sure that the commercial applications will, by just sheer necessity, start networking with each other to achieve their commercial goals. So this will be something that we need to monitor as things go to the mainstream, kind of like what's been happening the last 2 weeks, cue the Olympic theme. They've been using UAV drones. The Olympics now are using UAVs to film the sports, huh?
And what a perfect application. And as you mentioned before, David, I think they're showing up in some of the video. You can see them in the background or up in the sky and so forth. And certainly you can see the video that's come from these. You know, it's for television, this is great because now you can transmit from a multi-copter nice live HD quality television pictures, which is, of course, exactly what they want. And from a vantage point that can really illustrate what's going on in the sport in ways that you couldn't otherwise. I mean, many of these sports, you could say, well, you know, you could use a helicopter or something, but that would be disruptive, create too much noise, Just add too much drama, take too much away from the sport, whereas a small little copter of some sort can observe the activities of the sport without disrupting it. It's a perfect application.
And this where it's showing up is the slope style sports, where there's a lot of aerobatics involved, where the ski jumpers are doing flips and twists and stuff. And seeing that action from a level on par with them as they're jumping 50 or so feet in the air is pretty, it's pretty dynamic, I guess is the best way to describe it. And it's, the footage is amazing. It's definitely high def, high quality footage, and it's doing nothing but enhancing the sport. It's not affecting the athletes in any way, like a helicopter with downwash would. But in this case, it's quietly sitting there observing, and we're getting a lot of good quality footage. So, and it's also giving UAVs a really good positive spin because the news reporters are liking it.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that we've talked about too, is that part of the PR that's required for drones, if you want to call them that, is for people to see that it's not just about, you know, military applications that result in someone's death. So, yeah, I think that's great. You know what this reminds me of somewhat, David, is American football. I mean, you watch a football game now, and most of the networks have multiple cameras that are on wires, so the camera actually traverses the field, and you can combine the video to make it almost a 3D kind of perspective. And that's kind of what you can do with these UAVs in a sporting event like the Olympics. And again, it just provides perspectives that you really can't get otherwise.
As far as perspectives going, I sort of inadvertently have decided I'm going to do something called the video of the week. And this week is a DJI Phantom. How surprising. but it's videotaping high def over Niagara Falls, and we'll put a link in the show notes. It's one of those amazing qualities and amazing perspectives on someone who's been to Niagara Falls multiple times. It definitely changes some of your perspectives. And in one point, it looks like the water's flowing up instead of down. And it's a really phenomenal 5-minute video. So we want our listeners to take time to watch. And if you find one that you really like, send it to feedback@theuavdigest.com so that we can share it with everyone else. Max and I like the videos, and that's one of the reasons why we've been involved with this. So send us your videos or the ones you've shot, or so we can keep going, and we'll include it in the video of the week.
This is a great idea, David. I like this idea a lot, and that you've picked a great one for the inaugural video of the week. That is a really dramatic shot of the falls, and it really does provide a view of the falls that you just can't get if you're there in the viewing areas. Maybe if you're in a barrel going over the falls, you might get a similar perspective. But this is a great one. So good choice, David.
And the next thing, we've got great listeners. If Max and I don't tell you guys that enough, we should. But we've gotten some great feedback. And, of course, feedback@theuavdigest.com. So let's start talking a little bit about some feedback from our listeners. Huh, Max?
Yes, we received some from Don. And he sent us a link. This is concerning the TED Talks, isn't it, David?
Yeah, the TED Talks. And it's Andreas Rapopoulos, No Roads, There's a Drone for That. It was talking about the mule charges, the Kickstarter program for the contest in Africa about transporting packages by drone instead of helicopter, and providing food to various areas that are not accessible by road. So tune in for that. We also heard from Tony from Sydney about integration. Another marsupial program, huh, Max?
Yeah, this is kind of a dual. This is a concept car that Renault produced or displayed that it's a small SUV, but it comes equipped with a very interesting option.
Yeah, you too can use your first-person viewing, hopefully while you're stuck in traffic, with your quadcopter. I don't know how you're going to do first-person view and drive at the same time, Max, but it's kind of an interesting concept of very Batman-esque. You're stuck in traffic. You're late for your meeting. What do? You launch your quadcopter to find out a better way to get there. I prefer Waze. It's much easier, yes. But this is a unique way of... It's thinking out of the box, and it is why Max and I are very fond of concept cars, because a lot of the concepts never happen, but it is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's just thinking, this isn't actually ever going to happen, I guess, but it represents some interesting thinking. And again, as we said earlier, it's another example of putting UAVs sort of in the public consciousness, and that's good. Tony also mentioned that he enjoys not only this podcast, but also our Airplane Geeks podcast. But the most exciting thing is he's soon going to be taking delivery of a Blade Nano quadcopter. So that's great, Tony, and we'll look forward to a report from you on your success with the little quadcopter.
So, and should we ask, how are you doing with your flying skills?
With a foot and a half of snow, it doesn't fly. It's in the box. Hopefully in the spring we'll let it out.
In Airplane Geeks terms, you're currently under a ground stop.
Exactly.
And speaking of cars, those who are fond of Corvettes, as many people have said, is turn away from this. About the story is actually about the National Corvette Museum, and in the middle of the museum, a giant sinkhole opened up, and many of the cars fell in the giant sinkhole. But what was interesting about it was, to survey the damage in a safe manner, they used a quadcopter, huh?
Yeah, and for those who aren't familiar with sinkholes, because I don't know if these exist or these happen everywhere, but it's what it sounds like. Quite literally, a hole opens up in the ground, usually because something deep below has become undermined or washed away or something. And that happened right under this museum, and it just swallowed up these fantastic, beautiful Corvettes.
Priceless
Corvettes. Well, this is also an extremely dangerous situation because you don't know if the thing is stable or unstable, and they're very difficult to go in and assess. Perfect application for a quadcopter in a video camera, and the thing takes off from close to the edge of the sinkhole. Again, this is inside the building, inside the museum. And flies down into it, and you can see the Corvettes down there. You can assess the situation and so forth. Perfect example of an environment that's not safe for people. You need some kind of remote sensing, and in this case, a quadcopter is perfect for that.
And he also noted it's not a DJI Phantom that's doing the he's not sure what it is, but it's not a DJI Phantom. So.
Right.
We're not anti We're not anti DJI Phantoms. It's just it seems to be the quadcopter of choice these days. So, well, since I can't say DJI anymore, I think maybe it's getting close to us wrapping up this show, huh, Max?
That's right. We want to thank all of you for listening to episode 26 of the UAV Digest. Find show notes at theuavdigest.com, and that'll have links to the news stories and some of the companies we mention and so forth. We invite you to submit your comments there as well. If you want to use the shortcut, make it nice and easy, you can go to theuavdigest.com/26 for episode 26. And David, where else can folks find us?
You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us... You can find us on a stretcher after the show. You can find us on Stitcher.com and stream us directly to your phone. Of course, you can find us on iTunes. And if you love us and you want everyone else to find out about us so we can get even better guests, please leave some feedback there. It's greatly appreciative. On Twitter, we have @UAV Digest, which we've got quite a few Twitter followers. I'm really sort of surprised, and we're going to start networking with them more. And of course, UAV Digest on Facebook.com. So with that being said, I think I'm hearing thunder and snow again, so I think we should call it a night. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening, everyone.